Hello there and welcome to another episode of Marketing Room 101. I'm Ben Norman, Strategy Director at Principles, the comms agency that builds unforgettable brands, and this is the podcast where I invite marketers to join me for a good old rant and I give them the chance to banish one thing from the industry forever. Today I'm joined by Louise Tullin, Marketing Director at 55 Redefined, to tackle the issue of age in marketing, or more specifically, the obsession with youth that's plaguing our industry. Louise is a very smart marketer who's worked both client and agency side and held top marketing jobs across different industries. And what I enjoyed most about this conversation is just how positively Louise positions the issue of age. On any topic surrounding diversity and inclusion, it can be easy for it to become quite heavy. But instead of ranting and complaining about the status quo, Louise makes her case in a really positive, fun and energetic way that just happens to be underpinned by a huge weight of evidence. So here's my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Louise Tullin. Louise, welcome to Marketing Room 101.
Thank you. Great to be here. Good morning. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. So, Louise, could you please get started by describing for our listeners what it's like here in Marketing Room 101?
Yeah, I did think about this a bit. And I think for me, it would be filled with lots of people who completely undervalue marketing. I remember very early on in my career, someone referred to the marketing team as the colouring in department. And I thought, wow, because the reality is like all teams are equally important, right? You need HR, finance, you need marketing. But marketing is so important on so many different levels. You know, you've got to secure your investment round on the story that you tell about the future of the company. You've got to drive growth through direct response. And because 95% of B2B buyers aren't in market to buy right now, you're going to need to build those memory structures and the long-term brand effects so that when they are looking to buy, they will come back to you. I think it would also be filled with lots of people like very strong opinions on marketing who perhaps haven't worked in the discipline, and all for people having an opinion and different teams working together. Of course, you know, that's how companies work and that's brilliant. But marketers often are like very skilled people who've had a lot of training. I think about my career, I've got a diploma, which I studied at night school with the CIM, did the CMO Academy with Jim Stengel, the ex-CMO of P&G, the Mark Ritz mini MBA, Richard Shotton's behavioral marketing science. So there's actually a lot of science that goes into marketing in the discipline. There's a lot of skill sets behind it. So very well-meaning people can kind of come in with an idea. It's like, that's brilliant, but let's really think this through and think about what the strategy is. So yeah, it'd be a combination of those two different types of people, I think.
Yeah, this is not a place I want to stay in for long, but it's a place I've definitely been in before many a time. This room where your frustration builds, doesn't it, when you know that like you've been to those classes, you've done that education, but it is probably the only discipline, isn't it, where everybody feels like they're entitled to an opinion.
Everyone thinks they're a bit of a marketeer. They're like, yeah, I'll have a go at that.
I think so, yeah. I've heard it mentioned a few times. People are like, the accountant doesn't open up to everybody's opinion, do they, on what they're going to do. The lawyer doesn't ask everybody in the room what they think, or, you know, everybody's not chipping in from all angles criticising a contract, are they? Yeah. But when it comes to an ad, it's tricky, isn't it? I think the point you've touched on there about this thing in B2B where brand seems to be so overlooked, that idea of building a brand for the longer term, when arguably it's more important, isn't it? If you've got 95% of people that aren't ready to buy anything at this moment, there's nothing more important than putting your brand into the mind first.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And people are going to go through a lot longer process and there's going to be more people involved than when you're buying a toothpaste, right? And I think people think that B2B has to be really serious, like, it must be really boring because we've got to convince these really serious people to buy something really serious. No, it's just like P2B, people to people, right? It sounds cheesy, but it's true. You're still appealing to a buyer. So you have to have an emotional connection with them and make them kind of laugh or feel nostalgic. It can be really, really effective. And because not many B2B brands do play with emotions, it's much easier to get cut through when you do have an emotive brand.
100%. I think there's this assumption, isn't there, that we all, when we're out of work, we go to the pub with our mates, we have a laugh, we tell jokes, we watch Netflix, we share silly memes, we do all this sort of stuff. And then it's almost the second we get in our car to go to work, or the second we get on the train, a little bit like Severance. I don't know if you've seen it, but yeah, it's like we just change into some serious mode of only being very, very serious and very focused and very considered in what we do. But I'm the same idiot in work as I am out of work.
I think you need to work at companies that allow you to bring pretty much your whole self to work, right? And be the personality that you are and all the strengths that brings, definitely.
100%. So, Louise, I've been really excited about this chat today because I've had a bit of a bee in my bonnet about age discrimination in the marketing industry. Ever since I read a book, and I think I was actually just in my mid-20s when I read this book called Can't Sell, Won't Sell by a chap called Steve Harrison. And what he does is he sort of makes the point that for all we talk about inclusivity and diversity in marketing,
meeting, we couldn't be more discriminative towards older people and also working class people if we tried, really. It's kind of really evident if you look at the comms that we produce as an industry, how focused they are on younger people, how much they overlook the older generations, but also in the makeup of the teams that create them. So to get the chance to speak to someone who's kind of at the forefront of that fight, I think it's a real privilege. So I was really excited, partly for the completely selfish reason that I don't want to get to 55. I don't want to get into my 50s, even in my 40s in this industry, and then find myself like so many others without a job or pushed into a corner or whatever it might be. So in a roundabout way, what I'm trying to ask is, could you give us an intro to the actual problem of age discrimination in the marketing industry, but also in a general sense? And what is it that 55 Redefined is doing to tackle it?
Yeah. So if you look at the average age of people in advertising, they're going to be around 32. That's according to the IPA agency consensus. Whereas the average UK worker is going to be around 41. And those people who are working in agencies, about 6% are going to be over 50. So that's quite alarming, isn't it? And there's just a massive disconnect. So there's one thing, which is like, what's the right thing to do, right? And we should be making sure that we're inclusive in our advertising across all categories, right? But there's also the business effects. Age should be at the top of every boardroom agenda. Our average life expectancy has increased by about 30 years over the last century, which is absolutely phenomenal. Crazy. People generally, of course, those who are lucky and privileged, are living for longer, which means we're going to have to work for longer, right? Because you can't have all these people just retire. There's going to be a massive cliff edge of those skill sets going out of the organisation. And at the same time, you've got around the world, birth rates just absolutely dwindling, people having less and less children. So there's going to be this gap in the workforce population. And of course, the people who are actually buying the products, the majority of the wealth, so 70% of the world's wealth is sat with people are over 50, but 10% of ads are targeting those people. So there's this massive disconnect between the people who have actually got the money and the people who have been targeted and engaged with the adverts. And I think it's largely because of the average age of the people working within the industry. You know, if you walk down the street or if you go onto a tube in London, just take a look. How many ads do you see that actually feature over 50s?
It's almost none, isn't it?
Almost none. And then look at how they're depicted. Are they like feeble? Are they isolated? Are they really, really ill? Or are they the protagonist? Very unlikely. What products are they actually selling? You know, I'm constantly targeted by Botox and collagen. I don't even know what these things are that you put in your skin. But it's just when you reach a certain age, you get lumped in this category by advertisers. I think it really comes back to the fact that the creative teams who are making the ads, you know, quite often will be younger. And, you know, to them, 50 feels like really, really old. But actually, you know, with the advent of 100-year life, it's like halfway through, right? It's midlife.
Yeah, it's quite frightening, isn't it? Exactly what you say, both the teams and the comms that those teams produce. Yeah, it's quite frightening when you do think just how many people are over 55, just how many people are spending money over 55. And they're not buying the products that have been targeted to them, are they? They're still buying Nike trainers. They're still more likely to be buying a new car than anybody else. It's So what is it that 55 Redefined does to help businesses and brands then? If we say we understand this problem and it is now on the top of the board agenda and we've acknowledged that actually we really need to get better at this and we really need to be more inclusive in that respect, what is it that you guys can do to help?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just give you a bit of background on the company and how it's set up. So our CEO and founder, Lindsay, she was working as a CEO in a recruitment agency, and she got asked to target bankers from the 1990s because they had a very specific skill set and they needed to bring that back. And she hired something like 400 people within 8 weeks. And as she was phoning her contacts, her black book of contacts, she was going through, and a lot of them had retired, and they were saying, the first 18 months was great. I went to go on holiday, caught up with all my mates, started playing a new sport or hobby. But actually, after 18 months to 2 years, I kind of felt bored and undervalued. And actually, work brings so much purpose to us and structure. And through your contacts over the years of who you work with, you know, just amazing social network, isn't it? So she set up the company, and we say we attract, engage, and grow over 50s. Talent, but also consumers as well. So we will do things like we have a jobs board where organisations who are either accredited and have shown that they've taken real steps to include over 50s, or who just really care about recruiting older talent, you can advertise their roles, and then over 50s can go to that site and think, okay, these companies have generally said that they want to engage with over 50s talent. So there's one element which is kind of on the recruitment side. Another element that we help organisations with is really kind of looking at their age strategy. So what percentage of our workforce is over 50? How are we supporting those people? What training and development do we have in place? Then we'll make sure that you engage your over 50s so they feel well supported. So we have a coaching platform for people over 50 who may be looking to retire, because in the UK you can't ask people. It's a protected characteristic. So, you know, 10% of your workforce might be retiring in the next 2 to 5 years and you have no idea. So we have solutions which will help them. We also have like an e-learning solution so that people can learn about intergenerational and multi-generational working, because it's not that we just want to skew all one way, right, and recruit loads of over 50s. We have to work out different generations can work together, and you have to have lenses. And actually ageism, I think, can flow both ways. So we can be really negative about Gen Z, which is not helpful, and we have these stereotypes, right? So look, there's a whole spectrum of how we can help organisations. Yeah,
I think that point you've just touched on there as well, that idea of not just looking at this as it's just about over 55. It's just about how can all these different generations work together? Because I still think age-based targeting or age-based grouping can be one of the biggest myths in all of our industry, that idea that all of a sudden you get to a different, you cross into a different generation, or you get to a different age bracket and you start acting in a different way. Gen Z are voting for Trump just as much as they're not voting for Trump. Mm-hmm. But Gen Z are recycling and not recycling in the same way that over 55s are divided across the left of politics, the right of politics, pro-Brexit, anti-Brexit. You might get minor fluctuations across different areas, but it's quite dangerous, isn't it, just to assume that because someone's in an age bracket, they are all in some way thinking and acting in the same way, when you couldn't find a broader spread than, if you say, I want to speak to people between ages 40 and 50, you will find every possible difference in opinion and behaviour within that group, won't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we love to have personas, right? And quite often over 50s will be like silver surfers.
100%. Yeah. She's looking forward to her retirement, and she goes on 4 holidays a year to the same place because it's got the food that she likes. Or I don't know, these nonsense personas.
Yeah, absolutely. We see these personas, and, you know, as marketers, we should always be looking at the numbers and the insights. I see this quite often with platform advertising. It's like, of course, we love TikTok and Snapchat, and you can't ignore the usage and platform explosion. And yes, you are going to find over 50s on those platforms as well. But where are your audience actually? You know, what platforms are they consuming? And I remember I was working on Unruly, we were purchased by News Corp, and they obviously own, you know, the Times. And you'd have people coming to me in the sales team, like, how are we going to sell News Corp inventory? It's so old. And I was like, yeah, but why would you ignore a CFO who reads the FT and the Times on a Sunday? Like, that's such a valuable audience. Yeah. So there's like, oh, we don't want to target older people because we're working at media agencies and we're young and cool and we love looking at Snapchat and TikTok and that's what we consume. Or we live in London and, you know, advertisers generally living in London or an affluent area. You know, they read The Guardian, they're very left wing, you know, and that's fine. But you have to always look at your audience and what they're consuming. I think sometimes we miss the numbers there. So yeah, there can be stereotypes, but also we just need to look at where people are consuming content as well.
Couldn't agree more. Now, you're currently marketing director at 55 Redefined. And I heard you somewhere else saying that across your career, you've quite enjoyed the challenge of jumping around to gain different experience in different industries. Kind of because of working in agency, it's something I've always really appreciated, because one day I can be working on a really technical, heavy B2B brief. The next day I can be working on something for a crisp brand and everything in between. And I've always believed a specialist in one industry can be a great thing, but equally, the things you learn in one industry, you bring to another, and it kind of layers on top, and you end up with building these different solutions to different problems. So I've always seen it as being a bit of a benefit, but I'm sort of interested to know, was it an intentional thing for you, or was it a kind of a series of happy accidents?
Yeah, so I guess the common strand throughout my career is there's always been technology companies.
Yeah.
And that was a really happy accident. I literally, when The Guardian used to have that recruitment section for media, I saw an ad for a PR agency and you had to go present about something that you loved. And I went in and presented about handbags and I got the job, and that was a tech PR firm. That was a happy accident because at the time, technology was not as omnipresent as it is today. And it was just a huge growth market. So every company has had that common theme, but they've all been completely different sectors. So I started off in agencies and then moved in-house. But I worked for backup and recovery, disaster recovery software. I worked at Unruly Video Advertising. I was at Enthuse, which is a fundraising platform for charities. So I guess I'm always led by my interests. I couldn't work for a company where I didn't believe in what they were doing or I thought it was really boring. I have to get excited about the purpose and what they're advocating for. So I'm very interest-led, right? I didn't realise that until probably midway through my career. And then I thought, oh, actually, I hop around industries quite a bit. And that can be a real strength because you'll come in and you'll import something from a different industry that hasn't been done in that space before. You'll challenge and you'll go, why do we do it that way? As, oh, well, our competitors do that. Well, OK, well, let's zig where they zag and let's be different to what the competition are doing. But I do think you need to pair yourself with people who have got like deep sector expertise because they just bring so much history and knowledge of what's happened before in an industry. And again, that's just having diversity of thought. So I think it's a real strength personally. And I think organisations can benefit from bringing in people from different industries rather than stipulating, oh, they must have worked in this sector for the last 20 years or whatever. But yeah, I think the more you can bring people together with different experience, the better.
I think that's a sign of a good marketer as well, isn't it? Being able to go into a new challenge or a new industry and accept that it doesn't matter if I don't understand this industry because my first job is to understand the customer, you know, turn it around and look at it through the eyes of the customer so I can view this from scratch rather than bringing my own bias to the table, really. But like you say, you know, you need to have people in that organization, surely, that are fully under the skin of what that industry is and are deep specialists in that. But that's almost the privilege of a marketer, isn't it? To be able to say, I'm coming at this with fresh eyes because I want to fill my brain with all the perspective of the customer, not from my own bias.
I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but you're absolutely right. You need to step back because when you're in an organization, everyone understands the product inside out. They understand your competitor set. And actually, you need to zone out of all the detail and be like, well, what is actually the number one message here that is going to land? Or how are you actually going to emotionally engage our customers? So yeah, no, really valid point.
Okay, so the time has come for you to banish something from the marketing world forever. What I want to know is, what would you like to kick out of marketing and lock down here in Marketing Room 101?
Yes, so you won't be surprised, but I would like to banish our obsession with youth, because you see it everywhere from the ad creation through to the distribution of content. And I genuinely think it's harming our industry.
What do you think sits behind this? I know we sort of touched on it earlier, but why do you think as an industry, marketing, comms, advertising, why do you think we have become so obsessed with targeting youth, with employing youth?
Well, I think firstly, because of the makeup of organisations, generally, if most of the organisation is made up of people who are in their 20s, of course, that's going to be reflective in the creative. It's going to be reflected in the distribution. So I think that's a huge thing. I think also there's been huge progress, hasn't there, in terms of diversity and making sure that our creatives are more diverse. But age feels like one of those kind of last untapped areas. And actually, the funny thing is, we are all one day older today than we were yesterday. And age can actually be incredibly unifying because it's something that all of us will go through. I think perhaps when you're younger, you see it as something that's going to happen a long, long time away. Because actually, it does catch up with you. Also, brands, they want to be seen as really glamorous, really shiny. And perhaps we've always associated that with youth. But if you look at someone like David Beckham, he's 50. And I'm not saying the average 50-year-old is going to look like David Beckham. But the perception of aging is changing. And we are seeing, you know, more older people. Just on our TV screens, I see more older women now than I've ever seen, which is a brilliant thing. Because this, again, has been another issue that broadcasters would just lose their job once they hit a certain age. And of course, gendered ageism does come to play as well. So there tends to be different standards for men who are aging as like grey foxes and women who get ignored and overlooked from the age of about 40. Yeah. So yeah, there's lots of reasons. I think just even thinking about it and having the discussion around it is great because I just don't see it on event agendas as much as perhaps other areas of diversity and inclusion.
I think the more we talk about it, the more it will have an impact. But I think to my experience throughout my career, it kind of has been drilled into me a little bit. From when I was in uni, I was told the reason we create most ads with people in their mid to late 20s is because that's the point at life where everybody aspires towards. So I remember the lecturer said, the younger people look towards that age in their mid to late 20s when it feels like the world is created for them. The exciting time of their life when they've got money, they've got a decent job, they're free of all the struggles of being very young, being a teenager, etc. But then the older people look back to that as being the best time of their life. So let's create all our content targeting those younger people. And then you get into the industry and then you start working on ads that are mostly doing that. But then more recently, I've made complaints to Meta, to GWI, to a couple of other businesses, because their targeting just stops at 55 or it stops at 65.
There is
no categorization above that. So all of a sudden, you know, we're even told through our some of the world's biggest companies that once you get above 65, you're just in this big group that takes you to death. I just don't understand. Yeah, but it does seem to be so ingrained, doesn't it? And it probably does come from that belief that, you know, the youth is sexy, youth is cool, youth is what we need to try and portray. But I just don't think that is the case, is it?
I mean, there's plenty of studies that show you generally are fairly happy in your 20s. And then as midlife comes, you know, you face more and more challenges. So Eleanor Mills, Best Is Yet to Come, Sunday Times bestseller, she talks about, you know, these midlife collisions where we may be dealing with divorce or death, redundancies. You've got teenagers maybe fleeing the nest. So there are challenges at that point in life. But then there tends to be a dip and then people get happier again and regain their confidence. So it can be a very challenging point in our lifetimes. But that doesn't mean that we should completely overlook that. And I think seeing an ad of like a 20-year-old today, let's actually think about that. If you're in your 50s and you're watching that ad, is that going to resonate with you? Are you going to look back and think, oh, well, I was just like that 20-year-old when I was younger? Because everything changes, right? Cultural nuances changes around you, the environment that you're living with in. So I'm not sure that seeing a youth as a 20-year-old in an ad today is going to make you feel like you were happier when you were younger. I'm not sure of the science behind that, to be honest.
If anything, you perhaps just feel a bit sad seeing that. Rather than seeing yourself championed as an individual, it could perhaps do the opposite, couldn't it? Do you think there are any brands that you think do this particularly well that you think are ahead of the others?
Yeah, I mean, look, Dove have always led the way, right? So Dove Real Beauty Sketches was absolutely huge 5-10 years ago. They've done similar work around featuring older women in advertising. You'll see brands like M&S having older models in their campaigns as well. There's a brilliant campaign from the Olympics Committee as well, and it was featuring the oldest living Olympic champion and then the 13-year-old British skateboarding legend that is Sky Brown. And it's very nostalgic. So I think there are brands out there who are really leveraging it and thinking about ads from all different angles, but they're kind of the exception, right? I definitely don't think it's commonplace. I think it'd be really interesting to do more research around the percentage of ads featuring over 50s and just how they're portrayed, really.
I'd also be interested in seeing. So if you are a brand that wants to target an over 50s or an over 55s audience, then it's obvious that you would do that. You would feature those people. But what I'd be interested in seeing as well is more brands that want to target a mass market, including the older generations, within their thinking around a mass market. I had a brief the other day where we were discussing something and it just implied that we want to target the main household shopper, people aged between 30-something and 50-something. And I just thought, so what happens after that? The people in the household where they're 60, they're 70, they're 80, they're still going and doing their shopping every day. They're still buying products. Why is it that if we're targeting a mass market, we ignore that a large percentage of those people are over 50?
Yeah, absolutely. I think also just speaking to over 50s, like including them in consumer studies, making sure when you create ads, you're actually pre-testing them against the Nat Rep, but you're really looking in at over 50s and how they feel about that ad. Yeah. You know, are they even included? Does it feel offensive to them? Just making sure that you're reducing risk before you're releasing content, right? Because it's very easy to get called out. But yeah, I think it is this illusion of like glamour that comes with being young. And it's also very surface level. So it's very much about how people look when they're younger, as opposed to their purpose, their experience. So people who are older workers, you know, they're good at develop creativity as they get older. So sometimes we associate creativity with being really, really young. And actually, the more life experiences you have, the more perspective that you can bring to a campaign. Just how do we bring that different lens, right? And how do we stop being obsessed with looks as well? I always like to think of wrinkles being like laughter lines, because you've had life experience, you've had lots of fun. We're not going to look like 20-year-olds now. go to a lot of party people have had Botox. So I'm like, you look about 30. What are you doing? They're like, oh, we're putting this injection into our face. Okay. Yeah.
What do you think? This might be something you can answer. It might not be. But if there's one thing that marketers could do to get started on this path towards better representation of age, what do you think that would be?
I would look at the numbers. So look at the market data about over 50s, the amount of money, and look at that within your sector and just take it to as senior as you can within an organisation. Because what you'll find is boardrooms, executive teams generally are filled with older people. So actually we find that when our founder goes in and speaks at a boardroom level, the message is actually really welcome because there's a massive business drive behind this. You know, generally your working population is about to fall off a cliff edge. Do you know about this?
Yeah.
Secondly, the money is with over 50s, so that should be on the agenda of a CFO, a CEO. Everyone should be talking about this because I think it's easy to get boardroom buy-in for age because generally the people within those rooms do tend to be slightly older and it's a unifying characteristic. And if you don't have an age strategy, we say you don't have a growth strategy. It's really that simple. You cannot ignore these statistics. If you want to do something simple, you could do an audit of the organisation that you work in. So how many over 50s do we actually employ?
Yeah.
And what are we doing to appeal to them? Do we do flexible working? Do we do 4-day weeks? You know, some people want to work part-time and start drawing down on their pension. So how can we make sure that our EVP on our careers page is actually set up for older workers as anyone who looks over 20 on our careers page?
I really like that point about if you don't have an age strategy, you don't have a growth strategy. I think there's just something in that. We're not saying this is a have to do. We're saying it's a should do. This is not just a diversity and inclusion thing that we have to do. There is a real benefit to you as a business here. There's a benefit for your future. It will help you to grow. It'll help you to resonate better with audiences. It'll help you to have a happier, more productive workforce. Take that business case to people rather than just this is something that we should be doing.
Yeah, and you know, it can't just sit with the HR team, can't just sit within marketing. It has to be a rallying cry across the business, and you have to have business leaders who are going to champion this. Otherwise, it just won't be effective. And I think if you're an agency, you've got a great thing to talk about with your clients. Clients love being informed and educated by their agency. If you can walk in and start showing them data about over 50s and why they should be targeting them, then that's brilliant because it makes you look super smart and, you know, on the latest trends, right?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Now, while you are here, what I want to know is there anything that you would like to return to the marketing world now that we have banished an obsession with you?
I want to laugh again, don't you? I just want to see ads and laugh out loud. And I think we've lost our sense of humour and I can see why. So humour is quite hard to span internationally. What's funny in the UK might not be funny in Germany. So I think brands are, you know, as they've got more global, they're trying to transcend different cultures. So if you're doing a global ad campaign, it can be really, really hard to be humorous right across different nations. But generally, the data shows that humour in advertising is dropping. So if you look at data from Kantar, for instance, they'll show that since 2022, we've just seen big dips. And actually, when the world needs humour more than ever. So if you can entertain as a brand, you know, why not do that? And to be honest, one of my favourite things to do at the moment is just to go to a comedy club because I just want to laugh again. And years ago, we did some research on really with Peter Field and we coded some ads, right? And he was looking at different emotions and how they impacted business performance. And humour can be incredibly effective in terms of business effects. So it's more likely to lead to higher profits, to higher market share. You know, there's some brilliant ads out there. Dumb Ways to Die from Metro was brilliant. Kmart's Shit My Pants. I just laugh every time I see that ad. And you know, the world's very serious sometimes. And you know, as much as we talked at the beginning about being able to be yourself at work and not be so serious, you know, I think why not bring a bit of light into the world of advertising as well?
We have become incredibly serious, haven't we? There's something that John Evans said on his Uncensored CMO podcast. I don't know who the saying's from, but I heard it on there, that while sincerity is fumbling with the keys, humour's knocked the door down. And just saying how quickly humour can cut to an emotive, some form of emotive resonance with your ad, with your brand. And I think age is quite interesting with this conversation because I do think you can either use it intentionally to connect more with that older audience or a younger audience, can't you, by doing something that's specifically funny to them?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
You can use it to unite audiences. And Cadbury's did a very good campaign a few years ago to launch their dark milk range were. I think they used Kim Wilde, and they used people that they knew specifically would be recognised by an older audience but wouldn't be amongst a younger audience. And that was the idea. It was like,
we're
going to make this particularly resonate with an older audience by using people we don't think younger people will know. So we're talking straight to the older people. And the narratives in the ad, I would encourage anybody, go and look at Cadbury's Dark Milk launch ads. Then the other thing is, you look at how humour can then unite people. I'm obsessed with Bob Mortimer. I think he's my favourite comedian of all time. You look at how he's making people laugh of all generations, and he's not bothered whether you're Gen Z or whether you're a boomer or whether you're Gen X, or, you know, people laugh regardless. Showing that humour can unite people regardless of age, I think, is quite a powerful point.
Yeah, definitely. I guess a lot of humour historically has come from stereotypes, which is probably why so many brands have stepped away from it. But I do think there's just brilliant observational comedy, isn't there? Like Gogglebox, for example. You've just got such a spectrum of different types of people on that show, all making similar observations at the TV that they're watching, or politicians, right? So yeah, I think it has a real ability to unite. And there's certainly jokes for each generation, right? You have to have cultural context. Like you're talking about this Cadbury's ad, right? You have to know who these people are, or you have to know a certain saying, or this. Yeah, it depends whether you're doing a Nat Rep broad-based ad campaign, just want to target as many people as possible, or whether you're doing something a little bit more niche towards a certain demographic, doesn't it?
I think you're so right. The idea of using humour and being just a little bit less serious, I think, can cut through all of this stuff, can't it, so well. The final point I've got on that is, you don't strictly need to show the people in the ad that you're targeting. And by that, I mean, I've pitched ideas in the past to clients that will feature an 80-year-old main character to target a broad-reaching demographic. And they'll say, but we're not targeting 80-year-olds. But I'm like, yes, but do you love your grandparents? Do you love your parents? Do you love the neighbour down the road? For someone to be loved and to be liked, to be laughed at or to be celebrated, they don't have to. I don't only respond to ads that feature people at 34 years old. Or, you know, we can all resonate with all these people, can't we, if we recognise those characters in our lives?
Absolutely. So the Amazon ad at Christmas, brilliant example. These women sat on a bench and they just, you know, have great fun sledging, because, you know, no matter what age we are, there's a child inside of us and we all still feel young. You still feel like you're a kid at times. Like when I go cycling, I'm like, I feel like I'm 5 years old again. And that's brilliant. Well, it's a brilliant, brilliant advert for Amazon.
Couldn't agree more. Right. So we are going to banish obsession with youth. We are going to bring back humour. How do you feel now that's done?
I feel great. I feel like I've got a weight lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah, some people describe this as brand therapy. And I think there's something in that. So before you go, it's time for what we call the brother's question. So each episode, my brother, he doesn't work in the industry. He comes up with a question for my guest. And this week, he wanted to ask you, on a previous podcast, you said you sometimes run an exercise where you ask people to run and grab a random object that makes you happy. Please, could you grab a random object that makes you happy and tell us about it?
Well, I'm looking at my desk and I don't have much around me at the moment. To be honest, I would probably grab one of my cats, because if anyone doesn't know about this, Cats Protection do this amazing program where people who are fleeing domestic abuse, their cats come and live with a foster carer while they find a new home. Wow. So I can't show you the cats or talk about them for safeguarding, but it would be the cats, because they bring so much joy. And then generally, I've just got like a lot of amazing books on my desk right now. So Revolting Women is about why midlife women are walking out of workplaces, just setting up their own businesses. Invisible Women, why data biases in a world designed for men. Boulder, this our keynote speaker, Carl, at our next Age Pioneers events, making the most of longer life. So yeah, a bit of a selection of books as well.
I'll include links to those books as well in the show notes, and also the cats protection thing. How many cats do you have with you at the minute?
Two at the moment, yeah. I normally have two at a time, because I've got two kids, so they're like a cat to look after each.
Amazing. I love that. Okay, sorry for putting you on the spot there, but I think you answered that very well. So before you go then, how can people get in touch with you? How can they find out more about or get involved with 55 Redefined?
Yeah. So find me on LinkedIn, Louise Tallon. Very unusual name, so you probably won't find anyone else with that name. Go to our website, workredefined.co. That's if you're a business and you're looking to partner with us on age strategy. We also have life and jobs redefined. So if you're a candidate looking for a role when you're over 50, you can find organisations that are seeking older talent, or you can go to Life, which is more of a consumer site where you can read travel blogs and all sorts of content specifically made for over 50s.
Amazing. Louise, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that was my conversation in Marketing Room 101 with Louise Tullin. Thank you very much for listening. And if you enjoyed it as much as I did, please share it far and wide with people of all ages. And if you could take less than a minute to leave a quick review wherever you listen to your podcasts, I will be forever grateful.